Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, if you're just now joining us, there was a very, very tiny report as part of a much bigger report from ESPN's Jeremy Fowler that Pete Carroll's safe. He's not going anywhere, but it might be time for Carroll to concede personnel final say to John Schneider. Joining us right now to help us make sense of that report and look ahead to free agency and some other big decisions for the Seahawks is ESPN's Brady Henderson, who covers the Seahawks. He's on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Brady, how's it going?
Hey, Stacey and Jake, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. How are you?
We're well also. I mean, I'll start with the report. Easiest place to start here. Like I said, that report from Jeremy Fowler, your colleague at ESPN. Just so that everyone knows, you know, we don't know whether or not that report is true, but how has the relationship been working so far so that we know the starting point in terms of who gets final say and who controls the roster?
Yeah, I think the report from Jeremy was that he has heard from people throughout the league that they think that Carroll is safe. So I don't think Jeremy was necessarily reporting that Carroll is indeed safe. That's the general feeling. And yeah, he threw out there the possibility that what if one of the resolutions to this whole deal is that Pete Carroll ends up ceding final say on personnel decisions to John Schneider. And I think I could see that happening for a few reasons. And you know, that has been the deal, I think, since they started in 2010, that, you know, Carroll has final say. I mean, they obviously work together on everything, but, you know, when push comes to shove, and if there is a disagreement on something, that Carroll does have final say. And so I think that what Jeremy threw out there could happen, and I think it would make some sense. You know, I have a hard time seeing the logic in moving on from one of these guys when you just extended both of them within the last year and a half. But I also have a hard time seeing the status quo remain what it is. And this would be, I think, a significant change, and not just a change for change's sake. I think this would be a significant change. And I think you could look back at a number of personnel decisions they've made over the years. And I think some of those would have gone very differently had John Schneider had final say. I think the Rashad Penny over Nick Chubb decision in 2008 is one of them. I think that If John Schneider and the scouting staff had their say, I think that they would have drafted Nick Chubb. But anyways, that is just to say that this would be a significant change, and it would make some sense. Now the question is, what does that dynamic look like between Carroll and Schneider going forward when those kind of roles are reversed in a sense? But that would be a question for them. But I do think that that could be a resolution to this, whether it's that and or some kind of changes to the coaching staff underneath Carroll with some of his assistants. I think that's another possibility, but I could see that happening by the end of the day.
Well, and that's the unique aspect about it, Brady, and you could speak to this as well as being a reporter, that here in Seattle it is very unique to see such a collaborative effort the way that Pete Carroll and John Schneider have gone about it. And part of it is Pete Carroll being the head coach and having the final say. It puts him in a unique spot, whereas most front offices, you know, it's them that is acquiring the talent. They are getting advice, they're getting opinions, but ultimately they're the ones that are putting the roster together. Do you see it becoming that black and white there in Seattle if that was to be the dynamic change and shift?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jake. And I, you know, it's hard to say because we don't know exactly what all these conversations have looked like over the past few years. And, you know, I think it would be a significant change. And that's not to say that, you know, if this had happened this past year, if this change would have happened last year, that, you know, their season would have gone any differently because, you know, Russell Wilson still would have gotten hurt and all that. So, but I do think that a lot of the decisions would be different. And, you know, look, I think that the healthiest relationship is where there is, you know, a relationship between the coaching staff and the front office, to where the front office does value the input, and you don't just give a coaching staff players that don't fit its system. So I do think that there needs to be a lot of input from the coaching staff, but at the same time, you know, the scouts and the GM, those are the people who get paid to evaluate talent and to make those decisions. And I do think that along the way, the process can kind of get a little complicated when the coaching staff does have final say on that. And so, I think that if that is the decision that they would go, and you know, I don't know how likely that is. I do think it's a possibility, but if that is the decision that they go, I think that would make some sense. Granted, it would still need to be a collaborative effort where, you know, the front office is valuing input from the coaching staff on what kind of players they want. But it's, at the end of the day, it's the front office making the final call there.
Now, this sentence might have popped out to me out of context, but you said, you know, a lot of the decisions would be different, you know, hypothetically, or maybe would have been. How do you mean?
I just think I don't know specifics beyond the Penny one, but I think that just by nature of, you know, with a coach that has final say, I think that I'm sure that Carroll has exercised that power a number of times over the years, and it just makes me wonder beyond the Penny decision in 2018. You know, just to focus on that one. From what I understand, Nick Chubb was their guy for a huge part of the pre-draft process, and one of the big dissenting voices in the organization was Brian Schottenheimer, who had coached Nick Chubb. He was the offensive coordinator at Georgia. And had some big reservations about, you know, his hands and how much he could catch and how useful he would be on third down. And I think that was a big reason why they ultimately decided on Rashad Penny, or one of many reasons, but that was a big one. And obviously Rashad Penny has come on strong of late, and he's had this incredible stretch of five games where he's led the NFL on rushing. But certainly the body of work over the last 4 years would tell you that they would have been much better off with Nick Chubb instead of Rashad Penny. And, you know, maybe there are other decisions there where the coaching staff and Carroll used that final say, and they ended up better off for the decision that he made. But I just think that if there was that one decision with Penny that I know of, I'm sure that there were others like that.
Now, Brady, want to get into some other factors here in this regard. And, you know, obviously the main question that everyone will have is, okay, well, if that was indeed to happen, how does it affect Russell Wilson and his, you know, future here in Seattle? And is that a big enough change to make it feel like, all right, this is going in the right direction here? But to the relationship of John Schneider, Russell Wilson, everything, what's your understanding as to where they're at? Because there's been reports, you know, up and down that, hey, things are good. And things are also, you know, tumultuous, especially during the contract negotiation aspect of things. How do you view that?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I think that it's been good enough to where they've been able to work together this season. I think Russell has an ability, and you know this, Jake, to really put his head down and to compartmentalize and to focus on the task at hand. And my understanding all along has been that, you know, he sort of put all of those concerns that he had last season on the back burner with the plan to revisit them this offseason. And so I imagine that once all of this, you know, this whole situation with Carroll and Schneider and Jody Allen, once whatever the resolution is to that, assuming that everybody remains in place, whether it's under the same sort of format or not, I imagine that Russell Wilson is going to reach out to them again like he did last offseason and say, hey, what is the plan? What is the plan for the offensive line? What's the plan for free agency? And I imagine that he is going to want a different kind of answer than he got than what he got last year. And I do think that a big part of why he sounded off the way he did is that he reached out to them and said, hey, what's happening here? And he didn't get the answer that he wanted. And then he was frustrated by that. And so in terms of the relationship, I mean, I think that, you know, the relationship between he and Carroll has sort of, I think from a way, way outsider perspective, I think people kind of assume that they don't like each other, or at least that Russ is tired of playing for Pete. I think those guys get along fine. And that's not really the relationship that I think is damaged there. And I think that they can coexist. I'm certain that Russell would want sort of the offense to be run a little bit more through him. But in terms of just the personalities, I don't think that relationship is so strained by any means that Russell and Pete couldn't work together going forward. I don't think that's the case at all.
All right, looking at the offseason here, Brady, you got a couple free agents: Dwayne Brown, DJ Reed, Quandre Diggs, Gerald Everett, Rashad Penny, Ethan Posick, Brandon Shell. The list goes on. Is there any 2021 starter who you think has the longest odds to return?
Boy, the longest odds to return. You know, I guess if you would count Rasheem Green in that mix, he seems like a guy who, you know, I just feel like he is he's got a lot going for him in terms of being 24 years old, which is very young to be hitting free agency. Mm-hmm. He plays a premium position. He's coming off a pretty good year with, I think he had 6.5 sacks. He just seems like the type of guy who is going to get more money from somebody else than he would get from the Seahawks. And they've got some other young guys in there that I just don't see them really making it a priority to re-sign him. And maybe, you know, sometimes these deals happen where you let the guy get to free agency and then he doesn't really find what he wants. And so he comes back. I think if it is to happen, it would be a case like that where the market is just not there and he comes back on, you know, maybe a 1-year deal or something like that, or you know, just a deal that's not that expensive. But he seems like a guy who he's just kind of one of those, you know, he fits the profile of guys that they've had where he's not one of those like upper tier guys and they let him get to free agency and somebody else pays him a lot of money. So he's probably the guy that of their free agents that seems the least likely to me. You know, Quandre Diggs, he seems like a franchise tag candidate if there ever was one. DJ Reed, it sounds like he is going to get to free agency. You know, that was the sort of information that he passed along to us after relaying what he had told John Schneider that he wants to be back, but he's going to see what's out there. And so, yeah, there's some interesting ones in there. I mean, usually when you talk to these guys after the season, these free agents, the comments all sort of hit the same notes where they're talking about, hey, want to be back, but we'll see if it makes sense. And that was the gist of basically everything that all their pending free agents said on their way out. But we didn't talk to Rasheem Green, so I'm kind of guessing on that one. But I think he seems the least likely to me to be back.
Brady, what about Gerald Everett? I mean, there was some performances. I mean, you look at the San Francisco game where, you know, that was a brutal one for him. 3 turnovers. He dropped a touchdown. He dropped another touchdown against Arizona. But he's also been a very dynamic player on the field as well. He has been somebody that's broken tackles. He's played with a type of toughness and fierce competitiveness that really kind of fits this Pete Carroll model and all of that. Where do you see him ending up? Do you see him returning back here to Seattle?
I certainly think they should try. Yeah, and you're right. He has kind of had a weird season, and that really struck me during the game Sunday when he dropped that wide open touchdown pass on a nice ball from Russell Wilson. And he's had a weird season in the sense that he has, you know, there was a brief stretch in there where he was arguably their most productive offensive player. You know, you mentioned the run after the catch ability. I think that's really important in an offense where, you know, you want to, or at least, you know, what they said they wanted to be this year, which was an offense that has more of an emphasis on short and intermediate passes. And, you know, when you're not pushing the ball downfield as much, you really need guys like that who can pick up yards after the catch on those shorter throws. And he's one of the better tight ends in the NFL at doing that. You saw that a few times, you know, that catch he made in the Pittsburgh game where he broke a few tackles and got it down to the goal line. I think that was quintessential Gerald Everett there. So he there's a lot going for him, but boy, did he have a few blunders. There was the San Francisco game that you mentioned. There was, I think another, maybe in the New Orleans game, there was a decision he made, I think, to not get out of bounds. And then, you know, the touchdown pass that he dropped. So I think you got to take the bad with the good with Gerald Everett. And I think there's a lot of good in there. And I think that if they can get him back on a deal similar to what they signed him to this past offseason, then they should absolutely do that, blunders aside.
He is ESPN's Brady Henderson. He's been covering this team, a wealth of information, and always a ton to learn. Brady, we could keep talking to you for another 15 minutes, but we have to let you go. So we'll let you continue to keep an eye on the offseason, and we'll have to get you back on when there are some big stories about some of these free agents or moves.
You bet. Anytime. I'm happy to do it. I love talking with you guys. Thank you.
See you, Brady. All right.
Thanks,
this
Brady.
Hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times cleared up that Pete Carroll and John Schneider will have their end-of-season meeting with owner Jody Allen today. What could be the result of that meeting?
So it wasn't yesterday, like Michael Silver was reporting. Bob Condotta, who was on with us yesterday, clears all that up. But to me, what the result of that meeting could be multifaceted. It could be something to the effect that Jeremy Fowler, of what he said, of, hey, look, John Schneider might take over full personnel duties, and Pete Carroll becomes, you know, just the full-time head coach. And how that dynamic works together will remain to be seen, but that's certainly one outcome. But I thought this was interesting, too, from Ian Rappaport, cut number one, in terms of what Jody Allen might be trying to gauge as she goes into this meeting.
I do think they need to make sure that, one, that Jody Allen, the owner, wants all of them there. Nobody knows what's going to happen in Seattle because, as far as I can tell, nobody's talking to Jody Allen. And that is the voice that matters. And I don't even know that anyone there knows what's going to happen. But I think what it's going to be is not a choice. I think it is going to be a, are we on the same page moving forward with what we want to do? And if the answer is yes, then I think they're all going to come back. If the answer is no, then it's like, who's not on board and why not? And how does she end up dealing with that? I think that's more of what it is.
So figuring out who's on board, but then what I would ask Ian Rappaport is with what? In what direction is ownership wanting to go in what direction do they feel is the right way? And who is the one that has to get on board with it, right? So there's all these other lingering questions that come along with, you know, the direction for the Seattle Seahawks. And that is the one downside of having ownership that isn't forward-facing. But the other positive side is that, look, they empower their leadership, their structure of Pete Carroll, John Schneider, the rest of the coaching staff, the rest of the front office, to do what they do best and not try to get too involved into the question, right? And or too involved into things that they don't ultimately have firm expertise on. So we're all wondering what exactly that clear-cut direction is. We all have a pretty decent idea as to what's going to happen. We'd be shocked if either Pete Carroll or John Schneider would be, you know, out of Seattle at this point in time. But these are all questions that I think are going to be asked. And we talked about extensively yesterday what we hope is being addressed in these meetings and how this team can move forward. But I do believe that Ian Rappaport is correct on that, that they've got to figure out exactly where are the missteps and how do you progress moving forward, and if everybody can be in alignment and on the same page in that regard.
Second down. All right, what is the most important thing to note about Russell Wilson's end to the season?
End to the season? I think that his end to the season really shows as he got healthier, his play got better. And, you know, there's also the factor of the run game and the offense as a whole just executing at a higher level. But certainly Russell Wilson was a big factor in that offense executing at a higher level. And you know, who Brady Henderson, who we just had on, a friend of the show, he highlighted in an article today that Russell Wilson's QBR, not quarterback rating, but another ESPN stat, another way to look at overall cumulative play, QBR, in weeks 10 and 12, when he first got back from his injury, he ranked 29th in the league in QBR, total QBR. Weeks 13 through 16, he ranked 13th. So now he's getting above average play in those weeks. And then the last two games, he finished first in QBR. So the other stat that you have to look at in the final two games, the Seattle Seahawks were second, Stacey, in the NFL on third down conversions at 62.5%. And a big part of that had to do with Russell Wilson's improved play over the final two games. So you got him more and more removed from the injury. You got to see more of the Russell Wilson that we have come to know over these last 10 years. And that is something that you're going to hold on to and really look at that as a major data point for how you project Russell Wilson and how he will play going into 2022. I firmly believe as he, you know, puts this finger injury behind him in the rearview mirror, is healthy, ready to go, I think he's in for, obviously, a much, much better 2022 season.
Third down. Why is finding a top-tier center a major priority for the Seahawks this offseason?
Well, the reason why it's a priority is because the center, it's the starting point of everything. Not only the snap, Stacey, but it's the way that you talk about combination blocks. And we had Ray Roberts on earlier this week to talk about the importance or the dysfunction of the running game and how they weren't using their combination blocks well enough. Sometimes that's the guard who sets that combination block, and then the center comes in and helps. Sometimes it's the center that sets it, but either way, those combination blocks that happen at the very beginning, it starts, and a large part of it is how the center is working with the guards. And when you have a top-tier center that can solidify everything, get everybody on the same page, and not only can be a rogue grader themselves, that helps bolster your run game. That helps win you the 6-inch battle at the line of scrimmage. It helps you in pass protection, being on the same page with your quarterback and setting the right protections and getting everybody on the same page. To me, it was a major blunder. As much as I was frustrated and upset about Jack Conklin 2 years ago and the decision to move on from him, I am way more upset at the fact that they didn't go after Corey Linsley this year when they had an opportunity to upgrade at the center position. And oh, by the way, Corey Linsley goes on and has an all-pro season with the Chargers and helps out Justin Herbert in his continual development. But that is something that they have to find here in Seattle. They have to find a top-tier center via the draft, what you could have had in Creed Humphreys, or out in free agency via what you had in the potential of Corey Linsley. And that, to me, is going to help set the stage for your offensive line to be significantly better, much like what Rodney Hudson did as well with the Arizona Cardinals.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, got to be a quick one here. What can be the dynamic shift if John Schneider does assume full personnel responsibilities heading into 2022?
I still believe it will be a collaborative effort. I can't imagine that they will not work collaboratively together. But the dynamic shift that could happen there is that you see John Schneider in the front office really truly take over and assume personnel decisions. And that, yes, you get the advice from Pete Carroll and coaches, and you listen to their advice and what they're advocating for, but ultimately it's their say, it's what they do. And you could really see that dynamic end up happening where you know, it's not as much of, you know, we're in lockstep and we're you know, really truly working on, you know, John Schneider and the front office crew, you do most of the legwork and then the coaching staff's going to come in at the end and make the final decision. This is going to start with the front office and this is going to end with the front office in consultation with the head coach and coaching staff. And that would be a very different shift in the way things have worked over the past 12 years here in Seattle.
Hey guys, don't forget you can catch any of our shows live on video on 710sports.com/video. You can also stream that on the app. So you can listen on the app or you can watch the show on the app as well. You can do it on the web, 710sports.com/video. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up in the timeline, we've got a report from Jeff Passan a couple minutes ago, an update on CBA negotiations between MLB owners and players. It's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. It's The Timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. Now, I'm going to get one to one about Bart Scott, who has some very interesting suggestions on how Josh Allen can keep warm this weekend. In your wildest imagination of what his suggestion might be, you're wrong. It's a very weird suggestion. Before I get to that, though, because it is The Timeline, where we quite literally look at The Timeline on our Twitter accounts to see what's trending in the world of sports. Let me read you this one that came out about 15 minutes ago from ESPN's Jeff Passan. Quote, baseball labor update, there is no deal. There never was going to be one today. MLB made a proposal. The reaction among the players was not positive. Few on either side expected it to be. The question is how soon the MLBPA counters. Spring training starting on time is in peril.
Yes. Shocker.
So it's just every single sentence in that tweet, and there are like five sentences, is bad, bad, worse, even worse, horrible.
My goodness. It's just, it's going to be a hard road to eventually come to the conclusion of what is going to take place in order for baseball to start, and it is going to be extremely frustrating to go through the process, and we can all prepare ourselves for it right now with the tone being set here with that very proposal to kick this whole thing off.
I think that we all expected that the initial proposal from MLB owners would be very these two sides are so far apart that there was no way MLB owners were going to come in and say, oh, everything you want, here it is in our proposal. Like, this is going right. to continue to be ugly and ugly back and forth, and the start of spring training will continue to be in question. And I know we're all following Jeff Passan closely to see, you know, if there is any update there, but like our joke that we had earlier in headlines about, you know, oh, MLB owners offer a $5 rookie raise in Arby's gift cards. Yeah, it's a joke. I'm sure they did not offer that, though they should have. That might have been a better deal. But owners want as little change as possible. As little change as possible, and players want quite a bit. Not like drastic change, but, you know, a change to the arbitration system, like, that's big. Lifting the CBT, that's big. So I would imagine that it was very, very, very modest gains there. So we'll continue to track that, but otherwise not fantastic news. Meanwhile, next year, former Giants head coach Joe Judge held a going away party at his New Jersey home for his coaching staff after it was announced that he had been fired. There's reportedly 9 boxes of pizza delivered, plenty of cases of beer, and I can only assume a great time for all involved. Honestly, this seems like a completely fair, fine party to me. Beer and pizza when you've lost your job? Yeah, I understand. I would want beer and pizza while I'm gainfully employed. I can only imagine.
Yeah, that would be pretty nice.
I can only imagine the amount I would be ingesting were I now Joe Judge out of a job. So, you know, more power to you, Joe.
Yeah, can only imagine the stories that they're trying to swap and the frustrations that are being aired in that party as well. But hey, I mean, look, you're all in this together, right? And that is the sad reality of, you know, when we talk about, you know, the final cutdown day to the 53-man roster. Well, it's the same thing about Black Monday as well. And I think Pete Carroll, in his press conference, it's a huge reason why he didn't want to discuss any coaching changes whatsoever, because it is a dark day for the coaching world in the NFL, and you have lots of families that lives are being uprooted and changed, and it's tough. It's not just Joe Judge, it's the staff that he put together. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, look, you know, Joe Judge deserves any less criticism for what he did and the job that he did, or anybody that ended up getting fired in the process. But what it does mean is that, look, Joe Judge is recognizing here in this moment that this isn't just him, that this is also a staff of guys that he has brought to New York, and you know, kind of a parting gift, so to speak, you know, one last chance to get together before everybody else is off trying to find their own next job, right? So I have zero issues with this, and job well done for Joe Judge, who struggled to get anything right in his final year with the Giants.
Next story, if you see Bart Scott or Josh Allen trending on Twitter, well, it's probably because of this cut, where ESPN's Bart Scott has an interesting suggestion on how Bills quarterback Josh Allen can keep warm this weekend.
Josh Allen listening, can people get this message to him? Viagra. Take some Viagra for the game, baby. That'll fit that circulation going right.
I don't know how to move off of that.
I don't have any medical background, so I don't really have a response to that, but you play, so you must know something.
A lot of us take Viagra, right? Because Viagra opens up the blood vessels.
A lot of us take Viagra. What do you mean?
A lot of NFL players, at least in my day, took Viagra because it opens up the blood vessels. A lot of endurance athletes, because Viagra was first a heart medicine, right? So it builds up circulation, which makes sure that it gets the circulation to the feet.
So...
Okay.
that. Little did I know that when we were all asking, you know, players, hey, how do you deal with the cold weather? That was the answer all along.
Yeah.
Viagra.
Yeah, it was the silent secret that no one knew about.
I love the reaction where it's just a pause and they just, I don't know how to move this segment along.
Well, could you imagine being thrown, having that thrown at you live on TV just out of nowhere?
No.
Yeah, I'm going to take your advice on that there, Bart. Okay. But I don't have any further comment other than to say, yeah, that is totally out of left field. And I love that he continues to keep going. Yeah, the original root of this was heart medicine and, you know, all the guys were doing it when I was playing. You know, I don't know if that's still the deal now, but something that I have certainly never heard of.
Kevin Clark of The Ringer,
friend of the show,
tweeted out, you know, basically his reaction to that story. And then someone replied, well, what happens if the game lasts longer than 4 hours?
Then you start to get really cold.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm going to do the same thing where I'm just moving on from that story, powering through, because we have time for one more here. Shaquille O'Neal, next story here on the timeline, was forced to sell off his stake of the Sacramento Kings, and it's got people, mainly Curtis Rogers, wondering if there's a potential Seattle-related reason for it. Curtis, what are you talking about?
I put my tinfoil hat on last night because...
Of course you did, because you were cold.
Yeah.
I love it when that happens.
Too. But Shaq tweeted a statement last night saying, as a result of a new business endeavor, I was required by NBA rules to sell my interest in the Sacramento Kings. That's how he starts his statement. Then he goes on to thank a bunch of people in the Kings organization, blah, blah, blah. In the NBA and really in all major professional sports, you can't have stakes in multiple teams in the same league. So it got me thinking, well, why would Shaq be forced to sell his ownership stake? Maybe he's going to join another ownership group. And then I got to thinking, well, he just opened up a food stand right here at Climate Pledge Arena. Maybe there's something there with Seattle basketball potentially coming back. But then there were other people saying, well, he now has or he's going to be joining forces with WynnBET, the group that Joe Fan works for.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something to that
as well.
Like, you
can't be working with some kind of, like, gambling-related thing and also be an owner.
I don't know. Maybe there's something there.
The latter makes more sense to me because I think that there's hope and optimism that are directing the former reason there.
Now, Stacey, you don't need to come down on our parade.
Exactly.
And you just need to embrace the fact that this is what's happening, that Shaquille is part of a ownership group that's going to bring the Sonics back to Seattle. That's what's happening. At first, the first was just a small little, you know, Trojan horse of the chicken stand in Climate Pledge Arena, and then it's going to turn into full-blown ownership of the Seattle Sonics.
That's how this
works.
I am
with Curtis Rogers.
That's how this works.
This is the ultimate slow play here to bring the NBA back to basketball. Mark it down. Curtis Rogers, he mentioned this, 11:39, Thursday, January 13th, 2022.
You'll be thanking me years from now when you see the Sonics.
What about weeks from now when Shaq somehow joins like WynnBET?
Look, that's a different story for a different day.
Okay.
Today, it's
all
about the NBA, and it's all about bringing the Sonics
back. Okay. Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show. If you miss it, subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. I've been looking for reviews that say I only listen for Curtis. I'm keeping an eye out for them. I know they're going to show up eventually. I might, my mom might leave one. Who knows? Who can say? All right. So we're going to get back to that report from Jeremy Fowler, and we're also going to be joined. I'm really excited for this one by Baseball America's Kyle Glazer. There's plenty to be excited about when it comes to the Mariners. Let's go ahead and get to that next. We're talking about the Mariners' future, everything we're excited about, what we're really optimistic about, and what our expectations are in 2022. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, it's been a tough 20 years for the Mariners and their fans waiting to get back to the postseason, but this might be the most optimistic, most universally excited that I can see people about this team. We had Jeff Passan going on with Mike Salk saying this team is going to be really, really good and there's plenty to be excited about. We had people from around baseball talking about Jared Kelnick and his debut. Buster Olney, I don't know if anyone listens to his podcast. I do. He would regularly talk about him. He did call him, I think, Kellen. Neck, but I got over it. I dealt with it. He's Buster Olney. I'm fine with it. And then of course you have everyone who's really, really excited about Julio Rodriguez and him making his debut. And one of those people, Baseball America's Kyle Glazer, he's going to join us at 1:00. Before we get to that interview, before we talk to him and ask him more specifically about these prospects, let's take a step back. Let's look at everything that has yet to unfold with the Mariners season, what we're excited to see, why we think people should be excited, and maybe what you, Jake, and I'll talk about it too, and Curtis, feel free to chime in, are most excited to see with the Mariners once this whole CBA situation gets worked out.
Well, obviously what I'm excited to see is I'm excited to see the progress of these young players, right? Kelnick, J.P. Crawford, Ty France. You know, you go down the list of these guys, Abraham Toro, of players that are still trying to find their way and cement themselves in terms of the types of players that they are projected to be and actually show that and produce that on the diamond, right? That is what I'm excited to see. Logan Gilbert taking that next step forward. But you do look at the way that this farm system has been put together by Jerry DePoto, Stacey, and it continues to impress. It doesn't end with Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick, and that there is another wave, and that, you know, across baseball, everyone respects and admires what the Mariners have put together and the amount of talent that is there. That, to me, is tremendously exciting when you're talking about the future and also talking about the flexibility of the moves that they can make because of how powerful their farm system is right now.
Also, I should mention, it's not just prospects that Kyle's talking about. So in his interview, for instance, on baseballamerica.com, he talks about his projected starting lineup for 2025. Guess who's not in it? Curtis, you already know because you read this story, right? It's Evan White. Kyle said that Ty France is just a better hitter. It's going to be on White to prove he deserves a spot in the lineup. So there's plenty I'm excited about. There's also going to be some really interesting stories this year. Does Kyle Lewis get back to center field? Do they go? Do they move Jared Kelnick to one of the corner outfield spots and pit Julio out there in center? Do they get a veteran in free agency to put out in center field, right? I mean, I don't know what you guys think about what they could do with their outfield to start the season. We were thinking, oh, my God, they have so many options there. And then you've got, you know, Kelnick coming up because he hadn't made his debut yet. And you've got, you know, Julio in the pipeline. And now you're looking at it thinking like, oh, they really need some help. They might really need a stopgap there, but hopefully that stopgap has a pretty nice average.
Well, and then what do you do with Mitch Haniger?
That's exactly
right.
I
mean, he's a free agent after the 2022 season. He had an incredible year in 2021, but he's also not getting any younger. And, you know, maybe his legs aren't what they used to be prior to all the injuries that he had. So it's going to be an interesting situation to watch with Haniger and the Mariners. Obviously, he kind of assumes one of those clubhouse leader roles now that Kyle Seager's gone. I think J.P. Crawford is another guy that assumes one of those roles. But just based off of the comments that Haniger wrote in the Players Tribune earlier this year, you can tell this is somebody that wants to be here and wants to, you know, do whatever he can to end this playoff drought. I mean, he was very direct in everything that he had to say, not just to the Mariners fans, but also to Mariners ownership. Like, hey, this is a time we need to go all in.
Kyle also said something about Julio Rodriguez and his potential that I think should make Mariners fans very excited. I'm not going to spoil it now. We're going to get to it in our interview with Kyle at 1. And if you missed that, you can listen to it on the podcast, Jake and Stacey podcast. It'll kick off hour 4 of the podcast. But I want to ask him a question about something he said about Julio Rodriguez that should make every single Mariners fan so excited about what this team could potentially do moving forward. Staying away from that quote, staying away from what he had to say. Let's talk about just, you know, Julio making his debut. We're all expecting that to be this season. Curtis, you talked a bit about how the CBA talks might change when that debut happens. What did you mean by that?
Well, it could speed it up. We might not have to wait until May or June to see Julio Rodriguez. I mean, there's a very real possibility that if, you know, the whole time clock thing with players, you know, when you start your clock is when your free agency starts. If that gets done away with or adjusted, who knows? Maybe Julio Rodriguez is up opening day and the Mariners take on, I think, was it the Detroit Tigers that day or something like that?
Yeah.
That would be just a tremendous jolt of energy given to an already, you know, joyous occasion on the sports calendar. But not only is it opening day, it could end up being the debut of a guy who a lot of people kind of view as the franchise going forward, which is saying a lot because Jared Kelnick was also sort of lumped into that category too.
Well, it was seen as Kelnick ahead of Julio.
For a long time,
Julio was more raw, and like you didn't quite know what you were going to get, that the variance was just larger.
But just the numbers that Julio has put up, the staggering numbers that he's put up in the minor leagues, we're talking his numbers are on par with, you know, other phenoms like Chris Bryant and Vlad Guerrero Jr., where he's hitting 330, 340 in Double A. just stupid levels of production. I mean,
right.
We'll talk to Kyle Glazer about this coming up in an hour from now. But, there is a massive amount of expectations heaped onto Julio Rodriguez that I think he's got a pretty good shot at least getting close to those.
Jake, is it unfair to expect playoffs in 2022, or is it kind of like, no, that better be the expectation?
No, I very much view that should be the expectation for Mariners fans, and it should be the expectation, it should be the goal, not just the goal, but the working goal of the Seattle Mariners, and I believe that it is, but to me, it would be very disappointing, and I guess where my final thought on that, Stacey, is going to lie with the moves that they end up making in free agency. All of this is dependent upon, you know, the guys that I mentioned to start this thing, of their development and continued development and growth, but also what do you do to supplement those bats and not being solely reliant. Let's say Curtis Julio Rodriguez, you know, comes to the table and he is there opening day. You don't want to be in a situation where you were with Jared Kelnick when he first came up, where you thought this guy needs to be the spark. He needs to be the jump start to this offense, because they were so bad at the time. You don't want that pressure on Julio Rodriguez or any of those guys for that matter, because you have supplemented and brought in, you know, premium impact bats, impact players that can take the load off, but that absolutely makes your depth of your lineup and your overall level of play absolutely playoff contending worthy. And that to me is ultimately what I'm going to judge this thing on, but a lot to be excited about, obviously.
All right. Once again, I'm going to start by asking Kyle about his statements about Julio Rodriguez, something that should make fans very, very excited. That interview coming up at 1 p.m. Before we get to any of that, though, John Schneider could reportedly have final say in personnel decisions moving forward. So what's it mean for the Seahawks? We'll talk about that next.